Hi everyone, welcome to another Gin and Tonic Tavern Talk. This one is going to be a little bit different based on the fact that it is just me talking into the void today, and hoping that you will find entertainment or something in the words that I say. And firstly, I really need to stop and thank the half dozen people that keep listening to us when we play every week or when we record Tavern Talks. That's really great. That's really cool to us, and we'd really like to, you know, give you more shout-outs, so just, I don't know, interact with us on social media if you want to, and let us chat with you. I'm sure you'll have some great ideas for us, and we can learn. Today, I want to talk a little bit about my process for creating a character. I don't know what everyone else decides first, if they start with the idea of their character, if they have, like, this vision in their head, or do they, you know, first choose a race and class that they want to play, one or the other, or the combination. And even though I've only played a few characters over the years, I have created a lot. And for me, it always starts with a random idea. Case in point, this morning, I believe, I texted my dungeon master and I said, hey, character concept, a tabaxi that is a real tough guy and gets really embarrassed when someone catches him purring. It was out of the blue. And I was like, oh, that would be pretty funny. I didn't have a class picked or anything else or nothing beyond that point. I always start with these weird random ideas and go from there. Sometimes it turns into a character, and sometimes I discard the idea halfway through going, yeah, this really wasn't anything good. So I want to tell you about my first real Dungeons & Dragons character. She was, without a doubt, a success, and I went pretty deep into her history. I learned a lot of what I could about halflings and things like that. So, yeah, her name was Zan, and she was a halfling. Insert tragic backstory. She got ejected from her clan, and she's on the run. I left it pretty open-ended there because I didn't know how much my DM was going to try and work any kind of backstory in. In the end, it was completely irrelevant, and that's fine. She actually traveled under the pretense of being a man, because she thought that even a halfling man would be safer on the roads than a halfling woman. And she hooked up with these band of weirdos in a desert tavern, and the rest was history, pretty much. So my initial thought for her was that she would be like this scared little runaway in the background. Even though I picked rogue for her class, I didn't want her to be like the, ooh, jump up and kill everything rogue, or the steal everything rogue. I wanted her to have those skills, but I wanted her to be the background character, not a big talker kind of thing. And despite all this, and being extraordinarily good with stealth, she really quickly became more confident when her and her party managed to free a literal god at, like, level 4. So that gave her a healthy dose of confidence, and really, after you tear down a plane of heaven and free a god, I think just about anyone is going to have some serious confidence. Later on in the game, she became a vampire, and that decision was mine alone. My DM gave it as an option. But let my character choose if that was the direction she was going to go or not. It was a little bit of a rock and a hard place. It was either possibly die or go with this unknown thing. And so I took the jump and I went with the unknown. Now, being that this vampire that turned me was part of a somewhat royal family, that made my character part of the royal family, and yeah, she got a little big for her britches at times. She got sassy, and it was very natural to play that in. You know, like, she stood up straighter, taller. She was more confident. The more her abilities developed as a rogue and as a vampire, the more confident she got with just everything in general. And it was just... it was really... I don't know. I don't want to say natural again, but that's what it felt like. It felt super natural just for her to become so much more outgoing, so much more challenging of things that are going on in her world. And not exactly taking pleasure in other people's pain, but using her vampireness to her advantage in forms of intimidation. I remember this one time we tortured a guy for information, and Zan did really good. Like, she poked eyeballs, I think, or something like that, and, you know, let her fangs show and everything. And then when she walked out of the torture room, she threw up. Because it's not part of her to be that malicious, but, you know, she was able to fake it for a little while. So with that character, being a vampire in a desert setting was a little bit challenging at times. Thankfully, I had a party that was very willing to camp during the daytime hours and move at night. But overall, definite character success. Now I want to tell you about a character failure, which is actually within this most recent campaign. At the beginning, we knew we were playing a pirate-themed campaign. And my little ADHD brain was just going off, spitting ideas, and I went, ooh, I'm going to make a drunk, naked Tinkerbell. Because why not? So I brought this to my DM, and he's not crazy about flying creatures. It adds in a lot of issues. I mean, I'm sure you guys know. It does. So we compromised. We had some discussions on how to make her a little less awesome at lower levels. Because it's no fair if one character can just fly over every single trap but can't help anyone else get over any traps. Like, it's... I don't know. That's one example. So one of the things that we changed was, instead of being small, we decided we'd make her tiny. And therefore, she'd have a much slower walking speed as compared to her flying speed. And she'd also have disadvantage with flying when the weather was bad. So if it was stormy out, wouldn't be able to fly, that kind of thing. Disadvantage on strength checks, that kind of thing. And you know what? She was pretty fun to play. She was... the way I envisioned her was just this careless big partier. You know, she was a druid that was always up for fun. She was at every party. She loved tricks. Preferably when no one got hurt, but she wasn't worried if they did. And she's just not super concerned about law in general. But when it came to mechanically being able to help the party on a ship, which we ended up spending quite a bit of time on, I thought she just fell really short. I mean, I'm sure you can imagine a tiny fairy isn't much help on a ship. The ropes are giant. Everything is big. It's just not super exciting when you can't help your party with these mundane things. She had no special navigation skills, nothing. And that made me feel like I had built an extremely selfish character. In that way, like, it was fun to play a partying fairy that was, you know, always drunk and mostly naked. But it wasn't helpful to the campaign. And I started to resent that. And it was a little bit much for me to keep going. And I talked to my DM about it. You know, I told him that the fairy just wasn't doing it for me. And I didn't really know, you know, what direction I wanted to take her. And he told me I could have an out if I wanted. And then if I chose, that would be the way to go. So basically, my dungeon master gave my fairy a very, very fancy scroll in game. And when she picked it up, I wasn't certain of what it was. All we knew is that it was extremely high level and extremely dangerous. I remember him describing it as like a gold scroll and the words moved. Oh, I have to go let a cat in. So I'm going to pause this and I will be right back. And I'm back. All right. As per usual, my brain has completely lost its train of thought. So I'm grabbing a sip of water. I'm sure this is so entertaining. But I probably won't cut it out because it's just the way my brain works. Oh, right, the scroll. So it was a gold scroll and the words on it moved. So my character couldn't, like, actually read it. And all her party members concluded that it was pretty dangerous and don't touch it. So this scroll was my ticket out of Fairyland. And I knew that my fairy wouldn't touch something that dangerous and unknown unless it was a very bad situation. So I didn't push it. There was no way I was going to try and make there be a confrontation. Just no. I'm not going to put my party in danger. So it took a while, but without any extra prodding or changing on anyone's part, the party did find themselves in a pretty bad situation. We were in the forest, we were hunting ogres, I think, and hags, and it got pretty hairy. We did a lot of running, but we couldn't get away because our checks weren't super great, and so we kept getting found. So there we were low on hit points, low on spells, and very low on options. My fairy was sitting at 2 hit points, and I thought, yeah, this is it. She's gonna read the scroll, because no matter what, I knew that it was going to do something that would turn the tide of this battle one way or another. And I think my DM had a lot of fun with this one. I rolled some dice that I later realized determined how many rounds this would last for, and then I got god powers. This tiny little fairy at like 3rd level had the ability to cast all her spells at 9th level for 5 or 6 rounds, something like that. And that was amazing. I have never ever played a character with 9th level spells. That was so many dice. I was so excited. The cost, of course, was her life. The scroll was, in the end, too much power for her, and it destroyed her body completely from the inside out. And I think my DM did such a great job of playing that, because like he talked about the light in her skin and the cracks and everything like that. And she just exploded. And it was great. It was really, really intense. And when it was over, I was like, oh my god, like, really? She's gone? Just, it was, like, even though I resented playing her and I didn't want to play her anymore, the way she went out was incredible. Like, I couldn't have asked for a better ending. That was amazing. So that was a good learning process for me. Not all of my, ooh, I have an idea, ideas are going to turn out to an actual playable character for me. So yeah, that tabaxi I talked about in the beginning, probably not going to happen. It's just sometimes I have these thoughts and I just put them out there and I run with it. So to replace the fairy, I wanted to come up with something different, and I took a little bit more reasoned approach to it. Our party consists of a wizard, a bard, and a barbarian, and then whatever I would create. So firstly, I didn't want to play another full caster like the druid fairy. I have absolutely nothing against magic users. I think they are phenomenal. They are exciting. And I absolutely freaking love listening to someone play a caster. I can't do it. I don't know if it's my ADHD or what it is, but there's too many things to remember at once. And then having to, like, pick spells and stuff and only prepare so many. It's too much for my brain. And it could just be my brain. So I was thinking about my rogue that I first told you about, my halfling. And I really liked her, but I didn't want to do a rogue again because I'd done that. And yeah, it was a success. But I could have played like an edgy edgelord asshole rogue, but I didn't want to. Step away from the rogue. Did it once. It was good. Get out of the zone. I landed on wanting to play something I had never even created a character for. The Artificer. Now, in my mind, I started immediately envisioning her as extremely book smart, a little bit nerdy, perhaps lacking some practical applications and social cues, or a not understanding social cues, but she enjoys her studies. So I stopped with the Artificer and I went, okay, now I need a race. So I'm picturing her as this tall, slender, slightly intimidating person that is always hauling around books. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I want to see what I can do with that. And then I jumped back into all the Artificer information and I realized that being an alchemist would be super fun. And then I had this idea of making her like old, making her a he and older, glasses, you know, like frizzled hair from failed experiments. And then I stumbled onto the Simic hybrid. And that was a game changer because I didn't want to play elves. They were smaller than what I wanted. Playing an underwater race to me felt a little bit like cheating, even though we all knew we were playing a pirate campaign when we made our first characters. I didn't want to jump straight down that hole. So when I learned of the Simic hybrids, I was a little bit mind blown. Like, I had heard the words before, but never actually read anything about them. And that's just on me. I don't have all the D&D books memorized and I don't know everything. So I'm going to read you this little bit from Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, which is where the Simic hybrid is from. And it says, "The Simic Combine uses magic to fuse different life forms together. In recent years, they have extended this research to humanoid subjects, magically transferring the traits of various animals into humans, elves, and Vedalken. The goal of the so-called Guardian Project is to build a Simic army of superior soldiers perfectly adapted to a variety of combat situations. These hyper-evolved specimens are called Simic hybrids, though they sometimes call themselves Guardians." So I read that and I went, well, that's really freaking cool. So I did a little bit more searching, and from rpgbot.net, I read the following. "Introduced in Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, the Simic hybrid is a novel race that hasn't been reused in other campaign settings. Created by one of the Ravnica guilds, the Simic hybrid is a human magically altered with animalian features to make them more physically capable. But these aren't just animal people like a crab person or something like that. Instead, picture a human with animal parts grafted onto their bodies like giant crab claws growing from an extra set of limbs." And my mind went, whoa, like extra set of limbs? That is so cool. And these biologically enhanced beings is really, really awesome. So now, even though it wouldn't affect game mechanically, I had to pick the base race. And I'm human. I refuse to play humans in fantasy games. I don't know why. I just do. And I had already discounted elves for being smaller, so I had to research what these Vedalken were, because clearly I don't play Magic the Gathering. And so again, from rpgbot.net, "Vedalken are a race of partially amphibious, blue-skinned humanoids resembling earless humans in body paint. Introduced in Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, Vedalken have a cultural drive to pursue improvement toward perfection. They tend to be rational and private and are often driven toward intellectual pursuits like history, medicine, and picking pockets for some reason." All right, so I discounted the last part about picking pockets, but this was fascinating. Like, completely fascinating to me. A blue-skinned, earless, hairless, seemingly unemotional, completely rational, biologically enhanced being. Done. Let's do it. So And that's pretty much how my current character, Adara, was born. She is extremely intelligent. She loves reading and experimenting. I like to think that she was part of the Simic Combine, but she left, maybe of her own accord, maybe she was kind of nudged out the door because she either felt or showed her emotions too much. Learning is exciting to her, and she truly enjoys it. And having such a simple backstory, just, it really leaves things open if my DM wants to explore any connections to the Simic Combine. If not, that's completely fine. But on my part, if I can get this character to level 5, I'm going to be asking him for different ways that I can play it out with Adara. Because at level 5, Adara gets a second enhancement. The first one I took was Underwater Adaptation, which means she can breathe underwater. Now, with my DM, we did talk about this and about the different pressure levels underwater. And, you know, you can't go, like, to the bottom of the ocean because pressure is going to kill you. Got it. Like, that's not even an issue. I just love the fact that she could just, like, sit under the surface of the water. Sounds like fun. So, yeah, when she hits level 5, she gets a second biological enhancement. And so I'm going to ask my DM if I can play it as she just kind of disappears for like a week when they're on shore leave or something like that. And when she comes back, she'll have this new enhancement, but she won't really tell anyone where she got it because, I mean, if she's not in great standing with the Simic Combine, then whoever did this enhancement for her is probably not going to be in the good books if it's found out. Something like that. Anyway, I think she's going to be quite entertaining to play for a while. She's definitely smart, and she doesn't set out to be an asshole, but sometimes she unintentionally is. Like, our Goliath Barbarian, she basically equated him to an orc. And was like, oh, do you speak what he speaks? Like, do you get it? Just because she doesn't see them as on her level. But I do think that she will come to respect everyone in the party a little better. She's just gonna get there, you know? One of the coolest things about her, though, I think, is that she has cartography skills. And that has come in handy, and I'm sure it will come in handy many, many more times yet. Anyway, you guys are all probably tired of me just prattling on. So I'm gonna leave this episode where it is. If you could, please drop us a rating and review on whatever platform you use to listen to this. It would be super greatly appreciated. We have a Facebook page, Gin and Tonic Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Gin and Tonic Podcast. All of it spelled out. It's a little bit long, but I tried to keep things simple. Anyway, I don't have a sign off like Caleb does, so see you later, guys. Bye.